Welcome to Pemba On Demand. I'm Norm Chapin, your host. I am very excited to welcome you to our podcast. Pemba On Demand is produced for physicians interested in professional development. We will be discussing a wide range of topics on the podcast. I will be interviewing physician leaders from the U.S. and from other countries who have graduated from the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee. These physicians will be sharing stories of professional and personal growth, overcoming challenges in their organizations, and discussing key leadership skills they have learned from the MBA program and ongoing professional development. Welcome to another episode of Pemba On Demand. In this episode, the dual role of AI, enhancing medicine and personal lives, we are releasing the live stream with Dr. Harvey Castro from August 20th, 2024. Dr. Castro is an emergency medicine physician and refers to himself as a recovering ER physician. He has developed exceptional expertise on AI in healthcare. He has served as a keynote speaker, GPT advisor, entrepreneur, and author. He has authored several books on AI and other topics. Dr. Castro was also CEO of several different companies, including Trusted Medical Billing and Prime Medical Staffing, before he became fully engaged in artificial intelligence. He currently is consulting on AI, both within the U.S. and internationally. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pemba On Demand. We're really excited to have you here with us today, and we're excited to talk with you about the dual role of AI, enhancing medicine and personal lives. I just want to remind everybody that today, again, we're using a combination of Zoom technology, live streaming onto YouTube, and I think this will give us a great opportunity to reach a larger audience. For those of you who are on the YouTube channel, you can put comments and questions into the comment section, and we will be having a question and answer period to address those. For those of you on the Zoom call, you can also insert comments, and Dr. Castro and I will be taking the opportunity to address those. So please take the opportunity to do that, and we will be getting to your questions later on in the show. As I mentioned today, I'm very excited to have as my guest Dr. Harvey Castro. Dr. Castro attended medical school in Texas and did his emergency medicine residency there as well and began working as an emergency medicine physician. He then attended the Pemba MBA program at the University of Tennessee, graduating in 2020. Shortly after he completed his residency, he became involved in not only practicing emergency medicine, but also the business of emergency medicine. And the reason we invited Harvey on the show today is to talk a little bit about his experience at Pemba, but also to talk with us about how he found artificial intelligence and some of the really fascinating things that he is doing in the area of AI, the areas or the achievements that he's already has to his credit and the expertise that he's developed. As you'll hear in the interview, Harvey has over the past 2 years really jumped into artificial intelligence with both feet. And he's done some amazing things. He's working, doing some consulting work, both nationally and internationally. He's an author, and I'm really excited to welcome Harvey to the show today. So Harvey, welcome to Pemba On Demand.
Thanks for having me. It's been an honor to be back at our old school.
Well, it's great to have you here. I wonder if you could talk for a few minutes about your experience at Pemba. I know that from our conversations and preparations for the show, you had gone into different aspects of emergency medicine, sort of the business of emergency medicine. And I wonder if you could share with us a little bit about what prompted you to seek an MBA and what you were looking for from that experience.
Great question. For me personally, I'm turning this off. It was all about learning. All of us are physicians, healthcare professionals, and there's this scientist in all of us. And as I had already started over 30 companies, at that time I had 350 employees. I had a billing company, staffing company, 7 emergency rooms, and 1 micro hospital. I felt that I was negotiating different contracts with different payer systems through my marketing company and also through the billing company. And I thought, I need to know the science. And so that really was the thing that pushed me to go get my MBA. I felt like I knew how to do X and Y, but I didn't know why I did it. And going through the program really opened my eyes, said, okay, now I see why I would negotiate a certain way or why I would do X and Y. And my friends told me, Harvey, I feel like you have a street MBA. And I said, yeah, but that doesn't count. You know, fast forward when I knew I was going to sell the company, no one would know. They would just know me as Dr. Harvey Castro. They wouldn't associate with me as the business. So I really wanted to have that MBA so that way I could say, no, Harvey Castro knows medicine, but now also knows business. And ironically, because of AI, that ended up being 3 things now that I speak about.
Great. So when you first attended the MBA program, was there anything that as you finished the program and graduated from the program that you got out of the program that you really hadn't anticipated?
Oh, that's a tough question. There were several things. You know, we all think we know X and Y, but then when you really go into it, I didn't expect to enjoy marketing as a class. I really enjoyed it a lot, and knowing the science and the psychology, I was doing a lot of that. But to actually dive into it, that actually surprised me how much I learned. I don't want to say I was cocky, but at one point I thought, okay, I know all this stuff. But then going into the science and the theories and the different journals and really diving into it deeply, being able to take that knowledge and then apply it, and because I still own those emergency rooms, into marketing was great. And then ironically, the pandemic hit that year. And so it was really important for me to use all those skills.
So has the marketing knowledge that you gained from the MBA helped you as you have started doing more work with AI?
For sure. For me personally, thinking about how to leverage book knowledge with my MBA, with street knowledge, and using AI, to give you a case in point, I created my own digital twin. And now I can take all my school notes, everything that I did throughout that year, and enter it into my own, I call it my digital twin, and literally have a conversation with that material and take it to another level. And that's a quick example how I'm leveraging our school traditional way of learning, plus artificial intelligence, plus my mind, putting it together and producing something way different.
That's great. That's great. Well, I love hearing stories from other alumni about the value that they found in the PEMBA program. Have you had the opportunity to talk with other physicians who are interested in or trying to make the decision about whether or not to pursue an MBA?
For sure. Many people, when they notice they have, especially on LinkedIn, they say, hey, you have an MBA and you're an MD. What do you think? I immediately tell them, you know, why I did it. I can't stress over and over, when you're out in the real world and doing certain businesses, I almost feel like, yes, the MD is amazing, but I almost felt at times it was hindering me. People would just look at me with the filter eyes of, oh, he's just a doctor. He doesn't know business. And I really, for me personally, I felt like I needed that MBA. I could tell people I grew a company to 350 employees, but when they see my name, they don't get that. They see that MBA that sparks that question saying, something's different here. And then I have an opportunity to say, yes, I've done X, Y, and Z.
Great. As you look back at your PEMBA experience, what is one of your fondest memories of the PEMBA program?
Honestly, just the brotherhood there. It just seemed like everybody, we were cut from the same cloth. We all had that passion for healthcare, passion for our patients, yet we all had different angles to do it. You know, emergency medicine, as I am, or surgeon, being able to talk about the same problems and just enjoy the practice of medicine, but with the business spin. It was, for me, I'm a little biased in that it was nice to have just classmates that were colleagues that I could say, yeah, do you remember med school when we had X, Y, and Z or residency, and then apply that into medicine. I think that was just so much fun. I just feel like the memories we had, the times we had together, I actually enjoyed my program a lot. It went by really quick too.
It did seem to be a fast year, didn't it? Least for me, it sounds like for you as well. Well, thank you for taking the time to share a little bit about that experience. Now I'd like to focus on The reason we have you here, which is not to talk about your PEMBA experience, but to talk about AI and how physicians can use it both professionally and personally. So tell me a little bit about how you transitioned from ER doctor, business owner, into an AI futurist, and what really got you interested? What sparked your passion in this area?
Yeah, I have to go way back. It was the first iPhone, and I'm literally in the emergency room coding a patient, and I told the nurse, hey, we need to start an IV drip. And she went and got the textbook, go through, got a calculator, double check the reference table and calculated and said, okay, I got it. Let me go get the med. And I'm looking at her and I'm looking at the iPhone thinking, I bet I can create an IV med app. And within a month or two, I had the app on the app store and it went viral. It was the first thing in the world that had anything like that. And fast forward, the reason I like giving that as a background story, I'm sitting in this office, happened to be on a website that happened to be ChatGPT on the first day. I think I found it by mistake and I'm playing with it. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to change medicine. And I remember that day as I was acting like a little kid, I went running to the kitchen, told my wife, I'm going to write a book on how this technology is going to change healthcare. And she looked at me, she's like, honey, don't do that. People are going to think you're crazy. People don't know what you're talking about. Don't do it. And I actually stopped. I started writing and I stopped. And then I thought, you know what? My heart and passion tells me to do it. So I went ahead and pushed forward and it was published right away within a couple of weeks. Then fast forward, having that ability to use artificial intelligence plus medicine to do more just blew my mind up. I thought, man, there's so many different applications that we can do. And with the rising cost of healthcare, I thought, some of these things, if we can lower the cost and improve the care, man, it's a win-win for the patient, for the profession. And then as I started really diving in, I thought, man, this might save people from early retirement, from burnout. And if it's done correctly, this actually, I think, could save lives. And so that was the main point that I thought, I'm just going to jump all in.
Great. It's interesting that you just fortuitously came across this, but I wonder, I know you did your undergraduate degree also in biomedical engineering. So I assume you were a person who was, as you were growing up, tell me a little bit about what your interest in computing and technology was even before you decided to pursue a career in healthcare.
I've always described myself as this nutty professor type of person. Anything I see, I personally don't tell myself there's a limit. Just to go back, really back, I come from really nothing, poverty, indigent. My mom was a teenager when she had me, no dad in the picture. And so in my mind, I thought, man, I really need to kill it when it comes to whatever I put my hands on. And so I was always fascinated with gadgets, phones, different items that were out there. And I was always that person that would be able to trinket. Even if I couldn't afford it, I would try to learn the science behind it, how it would work and how it could apply. And so my brain was just wired that way to the point where when the first iPhone came out or the Apple Vision Pro or just any gadget, you know, back then the Google glasses, I would do my best to try to get them and show people how that could change being used. And being a doctor with doctor vision in the sense that I'm biased towards healthcare, everything I see, I'm always thinking, ooh, that would be a great application for X or Y, or that'd be great in the emergency room. And it's given me pretty much an advantage because now literally countries around the world are calling me saying, hey, Harvey, we want to know how we could use X on AI or this or that. And it's been fun because I'm able to now leverage my MBA degree, my MD degree, and now my AI and creativity, put it all together. And that's what I do.
So maybe let's talk a little bit about how AI in its current state is able to enhance the professional lives of physicians, as well as spilling over into their personal lives and allowing us to enhance that aspect of our lives as well.
Yeah. On the professional side, I can speak from other emergency rooms out there for people listening out there that are ER docs. You know, we're human beings. 2 a.m, 5 a.m, I'm probably not the best compared to when I first wake up or the first 12 hours of my day. And so to be able to have a technology like AI to leverage and help me and be that peripheral brain is huge. Case in point, if it's 2 a.m, being able to have AI to double check my work to say, you know what, the differential diagnosis is XYZ, and me to think, no, that's not one of them. But on that rare occasion that it says, wait, have you considered this one? And for me to think, you know what, I probably need to go back into that room and now do the special physical exam, or I may need to add XY lab. I think that is huge. I'm not saying that I'm dumb, that I'm dependent on AI. I'm saying that it's human plus AI. It's going to be the best human or the best AI. It's working together that it's going to give us great outcomes. On the personal side, I'm going nuts on AI. Everything I do, I've made it work. I've purposely made it into my workflow where everything I do has AI. Anytime I present, all the pictures, the videos, the animations, even the way I speak, how I say it, all has been run through some type of AI to tell me, hey, these are the best fonts, these are the best colors, these is the best way to present. Actually, about a year ago, Pimba asked me to give a presentation to an executive board, and I asked Pimba to give me a list of those people that were I was presenting. I think it was 20. I took my current presentation, fed it into ChatGPT, and I told ChatGPT, here are the 20 people. Make sure that in my presentation, I'm able to give examples specific to the audience. And so then it revamped the PowerPoint. And when I presented, I literally was giving examples to the audience. And that was a way that I personally was able to use it. Other ways that I've personally been able to use it, just everything, any type of problem, anything I'm dealing with, I asked ChatGPT, hey, how does this work? Give me a different angle. If I'm reading a certain book, I'll say, hey, give me the book, but then tell me what's not in the book. What angles are outside of the book? So I'm able to complement. Last quick story would be, I'm on YouTube. I love TED Talks, and I'm able to use AI to extract the talk, look at the transcript, give me the key points that I need to know, and then have a conversation with that TED Talk. That way, by the time I'm done, even pressing play for the TED Talk, I've already had a really deep understanding of the topic and then taken it to another level. And so these are just quick examples how I'm using AI personally and professionally.
Have you talked with physicians that are, and I guess I should ask too, are you still practicing as an emergency physician? I know that's one of the questions we didn't cover in our ramp up to the show.
Yeah, recently I've transitioned now towards just telemedicine because my schedule has been spread so thin. For example, next week I'll be in Africa, and then in 2 weeks after that, I'll be, you know, another part of the world. So it's just constant moving. So mm-hmm. There's no way I could continue to be in the front.
So have you talked with physicians that are using this large language model to help them in the context of patient interactions?
Yes. I've seen the bell curve. I've seen some physicians saying, I'm not ready for this. I don't want it in my practice. And to the point where they've told me, if this is in my practice, I'm going to retire early, which is interesting. I've seen the other side of the bell curve that is talking to the hospital administrator, asking me, hey, how can I get this incorporated into my med school? How can I get it into my workflow? And they're all in. They want to see how can they leverage AI to change their medicine. When it comes to specifically talking to patients, I'm a little bit hesitant and worried because as a physician teaching another physician or healthcare professional AI, I'm not worried because at some point I know they went to school, they got certified, they got credentialed by the state, and they understand medicine. And so anything I say or AI says, they know what it is correct or what's incorrect, or at least know how to go down that, navigate those waters. When it comes to patients, I'm worried because AI, specifically ChatGPT or all the different AIs, sounds so convincing to the point that it's not like going into Google and quote unquote asking Dr. Google a question because they know it's a blog or there's different things mixed in there. The problem with AI, I'm worried about patients when they ask a question, it could be totally hallucinating, totally wrong, and it sounds so convincing that the patient will think, oh no, this is correct. And then taking that to the next level, I'm also worried about the newer generations that may think, you know what, this is the gold standard. AI is going to get this right, when in reality, it's wrong. And so I'm out there right now teaching doctors, hospital systems, patients how to use this correctly.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because we've certainly seen the number of advanced practice professionals, PAs, nurse practitioners who are now practicing. And this may be a little bit controversial, but Do you think that AI, because of the problems that we still see with accurate information, that either a primary care physician or an advanced practice professional could have a false sense of confidence from using ChatGPT that may, as you said, may actually provide the wrong information for the patient, rather than continuing to depend on specialists and consultants in the way that we historically have done in the past?
I see it as the great shift. Family practice doctors, generalists are going to start feeling that they have more ability to go into the different specialties because of AI. Case in point, we've all heard of these amazing dermatology applications where you can take a picture of any ailment and give a little description, and it'll say, no, that's XYZ, that's squamous, that's basal cell carcinoma. And so because of that fact, I really believe that especially the physicians that are in the outskirts of the major hospital, major cities, that have a hard time sending patients to the city or referrals, let's say 2-3 hours away, that because of AI, they're going to start encompassing more different specialties, or at least trying to. It's a fine balance. On one hand, they're helping the patient. On the other, that's where your physician license comes into play. Does that physician feel comfortable with the data that they're getting, taking it in, as opposed to saying, no, that's incorrect? The common example we all know is when we get a potassium of 12 and we're looking at the patient, we're like, we know this is wrong lab. There's no way this is correct. That's the same feeling that we should be able to look at AI and say, you know what, this isn't correct. I'm not going to use it, or this one is correct. And that's where, again, this is another bias of mine. I feel that the best clinical physicians out there are the ones that are at least 5 years to 10 years out that have that clinical gestalt to say, you know what, in my practice, I see this and I see this, and is able to balance AI plus what they understand versus a newbie coming through that has no clinical gestalt, just hasn't had that experience, and all they know is AI, then I feel that they're going to be biased towards AI. And so that's why in my mind, I think it's the best ones are the ones that have been in the profession, but it's taking this new information in and it's able to balance.
Thank you. This podcast is sponsored by the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville's Haslam College of Business. In less than one calendar year, this program will equip you with valuable business acumen and leadership development not found in traditional medical school curriculum. Are you ready to join the longest-running physician-only MBA program in the country and a network of nearly 1,000 PEMBA graduates? Visit tiny.utk.edu/podcast for information about this exciting opportunity. And now we'll return to the episode. Before we get into some, we're getting some questions and comments in the screen, so I'll switch to that in a few minutes. But I wanted to ask you one more question. One of the big challenges we see, one of the areas of harm to patients, is around heuristics and making a misdiagnosis or missing things. Could you talk a little bit about your vision for AI in the respect of how it can help medical professionals increase the accuracy of their diagnosis when they're faced with a patient who has a fairly unusual presentation?
So this, my brain just blew up in different ideas. There's two main things in AI. We have something called structured data and unstructured. And just to keep it simple, think of all your radiology reports, all this AI. When we think AI, a lot of people, especially doctors, think radiology. And that's a quick example that the AI is doing a great job. These non-specific nodules that we get x-ray reports all the time, AI now is able to look at those and say, you know what, that isn't non-specific. In 10 years, that will be cancer. And so it's quite interesting how us humans, in a way, look at it and say, no, that's, we can't know that. But they've been able to go back and look at all, you know, millions of these x-rays and say, no, these particular ones have this kind of characteristic, and the AI can pick it up where the human eye may not. And so that's one quick example how this could help. On the non-structured data, that's the one that gets a little hairy. You would think that when we go into the EMR, all that information, there's millions and millions of records for a patient, that would be easy to go through. Yes and no is the answer to that, not to sound political, but to that point, that's how I think we will be able to leverage AI. I know personally when I was in the emergency room and taking care of some HIV patients. They had multi issues, and I had to make sure that I had a balance and what drug and what not to use. This is where AI, I think, would do a great job to be able to take all the factors and say, you know what, this would be the best treatment. And then me as a human to go look at that and say, yes, no, let me do some more research. But that is the way that I think we'd be able to leverage AI to really save lives, to help. Another quick example is personalized medicine, the genome. You know, if I map your DNA, my DNA, and I come to see you, doc, and there's so much information, how do you go through it all? But if we fed it through AI to extract, to say, look, here are the key concepts, here are the key core things because of its genetic, and then being able to, like, simple example, the P450s and how that metabolizes me versus you, but being able to use AI to really give me that example and then give you a list of drugs, because you and I know when we look at certain drugs, there's three or four that we can pick from and we don't care. As long as one of those three, we're good. But what if the AI said, look, out of those three in your brain, yes, they're all the same, but this one over here will give that patient better yield and lower dose. And that's something that you and I really can't do. And it changes so quickly that AI mm-hmm. can take that data and dissect into something simple.
Well, thank you for that explanation. I'm going to switch over to some of the comments right now. So Don Leiter had a question here about the, had a question about how we can tell if the AI applications are AI or some other approach, for example, programming algorithms.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Right now, I feel like there's a lot of companies out there, because AI is a buzzword, that they're saying, oh, we have AI, we have this. But in reality, is it really AI? Is it just something very minor? So I caution everyone to make sure that this isn't just a marketing play, to make sure that mm-hmm. it really is AI. And then the other part to this is it depends on the user. Someone that has not been exposed to many things, they may look at something and be like, wow, that is amazing. Yes, that is great. But then someone that has been really diving into this technology and looking, be like, no, that ChatGPT could probably do that same thing. They're just kind of fooling you, which, not to pivot too much, but I think that's why it's so important for all of us to really understand AI, because all of us at some point, we're working at a hospital level, we're working with the C-suite. And so the more we know what to ask the vendors, what things to do, the better we'll be for us as a society, as physicians. The second thing I tell doctors is we need to jump into these startups and Microsoft and everybody that's claiming to sell us a widget in AI, because wouldn't you rather it have the hand of a physician and you be proactive and be in the development side, as opposed to they've made a product that may not fix the problem that we need, and then the administrator's told, here you go, you're going to use this. You know, I'd rather be that doctor that's helping develop that product. That way, when it hits the front lines, I know this is the product that we actually need.
So much in the same way that we see physician leadership in electronic health record software, AI is just another opportunity, and really it's a necessity for us to be able to understand the technology and to define how it can best be used to benefit patients maximally. So Dr. Guzman asked a question about privacy concerns with ChatGPT or other AI resources.
Yeah, excellent question. If you're using it in the healthcare, we must make sure that this is HIPAA compliant. To make sure that it's HIPAA compliant, we need to make sure that our servers through Microsoft or whatever, which way we go, that we sign a document and that we understand that HIPAA's link, let's just say, between the person and ChatGPT is secure. That way it's made sure that that's done, and there's got to be a signature between both sides. The second thing is my clinical data that's going up to the cloud. There are ways of creating the product where your data or the patient's data doesn't go to ChatGPT. Simple idea would be to use something like Llama 3, use that quote unquote ChatGPT equivalent, and literally put that whole algorithm on the hospital server. That way, when a question's asked, it's literally asking within the hospital walls, and it's never going to the cloud. That information would be secure. That would be a simple way that the patient could use it. And that would take care at least of the HIPAA and the privacy section for that issue. Now, the second question would be, well, what if it hallucinates? And that's where you as a healthcare professional come in. I'm always telling my patients, you can use AI, but whatever output comes out of it, I need you to run that by me so that I can look at that and make sure I give it my blessings and say, yes, this is correct, and move forward with it.
And that kind of goes a little bit into Dr. Cannon's question as well, as, you know, the question of liability is always going to come up when we kind of delegate certain things. And I think delegating to AI is another example. And it looks like his basic question is, how will that liability question be addressed? Is there any sense right now in the industry as to how this is being looked at from a risk, compliance, or medical malpractice liability situation?
When I give my talks, I say, we will be sued for using AI. We'll be sued for not using AI. We'll be sued for both. And let me explain. This is such a new technology that at the end of the day, what I tell all my physicians is, regardless if you had a say or not in using AI at your hospital system, because some hospital administrators say, here's the AI, and you're going to go with it, you had no say, and the AMA is actually against doing this. I worry that at the end of the day, the doctor, no matter what, will be held responsible. So I'll say it again. The doctor, all these cases will be held responsible. Why? Think of it as if you get an x-ray, CAT scan, blood work, and you're like, that's wrong. And then you document why you think that's wrong. The same thing is going to happen with AI. And that's one way that we'll be held to that standard, because at the end of the day, you have the license, not the AI. Second part to this question, when you think about it, when I said, damn if you do, damn if you don't, idea basically is as follows. Let's pretend a friend of mine that has a emergency room that has an LLM that as soon as the patient walks in, the large language model is able to read the CAT scan in real time and text him and the radiologist as soon as that CAT scan has been read by the AI before the human being has had even a chance to look at it, and calls it and saying, this is a patient with a stroke. Text the radiologist and says, hey, put this at the top of your list and make sure you look at that. Pretend there's a hospital across the street that says, we don't want that. And that there's a adverse patient outcome where that person, they missed that head bleed across the street. I'm worried that there will be lawyers that are going to say, you know what, this is quote unquote, should be the standard of care. People across the street are getting better outcomes. And when things like that, we start hearing that in the news, that is going to be a big issue for us as a healthcare profession, because what's going to happen is overnight, X or Y AI is going to become the standard of care. And that makes me really worried, because we got to make sure that us physicians are behind this. We're looking at the research that we can adequately say, yes, that is correct or not. So that's my answer to that.
Thank you. Well, let me ask you a few more questions, and then we'll get back to some more questions and comments. And before we move into sort of our personal lives and how you feel AI can enhance, I'd like to get your take on how you see AI having an impact in medical education and training.
Yeah, I'm going to reach out to my Apple Vision Pro, and I really think this is it. My favorite phrase in med school, and I'm sure we've all heard it, is see one, do one, teach one. And I'll never forget intubating my first patient and seeing one and reading about it. And then they had another patient next door and they said, here you go, Harvey, go intubate. And I remember freaking out, thinking, oh my gosh, I just saw it. I've read about it, but oh my gosh, I'm literally going to do this. And I thought, now that I'm holding the Apple Vision Pro, and I thought, wouldn't it be amazing for me to wear this, intubate over 100 times, see the different ways of doing it, have AI talk to this so that way it would look to see how well I was intubating or not. Seeing, giving me real-time data points to say, look, you should try X, Y maneuver, try this or that. And then before I even touch the patient for the first time, being able to now intubate. And so to answer your question, I really think this is going to be one way to help us with our manual skills. The second is, what makes us great doctors is being able to compile information, use that into a clinical setting where we're like, oh, wait, this disease that I've never seen in my life is textbook. But if you've never read about it, my other favorite phrase is, we don't know what we don't know. Now using AI, and I know some doctors hate when I say this, but I truly believe you give me AI and a doctor and I could probably get them through med school under 4 years, because I can give them all the different scenarios of how diabetes presents or XY disease. Or I could use AI to analyze their USMLE and go through and see what cases were they missing, what areas were they short, and then have the AI make those questions and help them in those areas that they're weak at.
It's going to be interesting to see. I even think about if we had robust AI during the COVID pandemic, and we know that it became a much different training environment for medical students, nursing students. And I have seen the impact personally of some of those changes during the COVID pandemic because people had less hands-on experience. And it is going to be interesting to see how AI can augment that training for not only proceduralists, but also people who are cognitive specialists by giving them access to some of the examples that you talked about. Well, let's pivot a little bit right now and talk about AI in our personal lives. I went to a lecture about a year ago where one of the lecturers was speaking about AI, and he predicted that within 12 months, every one of us would have an artificial intelligence personal assistant. So tell us about your view of AI in our personal lives, our kids' lives, our grandkids' lives, and how do you see that future?
So, and this wasn't set up. This is all in real time. So I just want to let everybody know this is just perfect timing. I see the future as wearable devices. I'm not promoting this. I don't have any stock in this. This is the Rabbit R1. It doesn't have great reviews. But again, this is a question to what's going to happen in the future. I can literally hold a button and talk to this thing and say, hey, I'm giving a presentation on AI in healthcare. Write me a song. So just telling it, it talks to the AI and it makes a song. And then I would be able to implant this into my PowerPoint. When I'm giving PowerPoint presentation, I say I need a picture of a doctor using VR educating patients. And then within a minute, it'll give me that image. That's one way right here. Pretty simple. When it comes to our grandkids and kids, what are they going to have? I think that Apple Vision Pro will be as small as these glasses. These glasses, again, no stock in Meta at all, but these are Meta glasses. And I can take a picture of this screen, which I just did. I could take a video, but then I can say, analyze what's in front of me. So if I'm looking at EKG, I could take a picture and could look at that EKG and analyze it. And so what I'm saying is our kids and all of us will be able to use these things and have artificial intelligence.
Battery 92%.
I don't know if you just heard that, but it just said my battery power, and I can have a conversation. So if you ask me a question, I can ask ChatGPT in here to talk to you and give me the answer to what you're asking me. And so now being able to leverage AI with this and able to give it to you. There's going to be newer renditions that I've already seen or about to hit the market that will have a digital display in real time. And this one just hit the market and they're called Brilliant Lab. But basically, I'm going to hold them. It has a little LED light in here or LED screen. And if anything I ask the question, instead of me hearing it, it puts it on the screen. If I'm looking at a wine bottle, I'm like, hey, what kind of wine is this? I can look at it through here. It'll see what kind of wine glass and then tell me what type of wine, how it's made, how much it costs, where it's from, the combination. And so these type of things, I really think that is the future. It's going to be very seamless. Going really into the weeds, ChatGPT just purchased, think of it as a tech support company. And what I see coming pretty soon is you would have ChatGPT on your computer, you're having an issue, and then ChatGPT is already on your computer, can go through and analyze, oh, here's the error, here's what it is, and fix it itself. I verbally soon will be able to just talk to my computer. Windows, the next rendition of Windows, are going to put Copilot in there. And what does that mean? For example, let's just say I wanted this picture that we're doing today, and it'll say a certain format. I could tell AI, convert this into a movie, and just with my words, it would convert this picture into animation. There's just so many different things that you can start doing with AI.
So there's obviously a lot of upsides, as there has been with almost every technology that we've adopted in our society. Let's talk a little bit about some of the considerations that you feel we need to take into consideration to try to minimize the downside risk. And we really haven't been talking about autonomous AI. We're still talking about that interaction between a human and AI. But there is a lot of concern when AI becomes autonomous. I think I was talking with Dr. Babu last month on our live stream, and he talked about, you know, level one through level five with artificial intelligence. And right now, nobody's at level four, nobody's at level five. But what are your biggest, if you have any, being as passionate as you are about AI, do you have any anxieties or concerns that you think we need to be especially thoughtful about as we roll this out into healthcare beyond the privacy issue that you mentioned and things like that?
Yeah, two things come to mind. Number one, we need our own AI in health. We need one that is reinforced by the right doctor. So if I'm an ER doctor, I only have business in ER medicine. I should not be looking at a large language model and doing reinforced learning in dermatologists because I'm not a dermatologist. Unless it's an ER dermatology, then I do have business there. Same goes for surgery. So moving forward, when we start looking under the hood saying, okay, what am I using? Make sure that it's something very specific to your field. Not that they're trying to take something, because if they take it outside of your field and try to push it into your field, it may more likely hallucinate. Another thing to keep in mind is, let's make sure that our body of knowledge is the right one that's training these algorithms. So is it PubMed? Is it recent studies? What is it that's being put into the system? Quick case in point, when ChatGPT was made, they were paying people in Africa to do reinforced learning, but some of these individuals were not doctors. And so some of this information that we're seeing in the medical world was reinforced by non-doctors. So that's an error. So we need to make sure that we do that in the future. Now, to answer your question 100%, my biggest worry is, it's going to be sound crazy to you, but I am worried that as I start looking at the large language models, the IQ has been from 100, which is average person. Now it's probably around 120 to 140 to 150, depending which algorithm you're playing with. My worry is that in the near future, and I say near future, in the next 6 months, we're going to start seeing some large language models with an IQ roughly between 160 and 180. And as this continues to grow, it's going to get to the point where not a single person in the world will have the highest IQ to be able to verify this information. And that scares me, because the output, it's going to be really hard to analyze and say, is this even real or not? And then once we get to that IQ and level five, I'm personally worried that we need to make sure we have some kind of kill switch. So if something happens, that we can say, you know what, we're turning this off. And unfortunately, a lot of these providers that are creating this AI is already putting it into the internet to train and grow. And so I'm worried that if this really grows, I don't think there will be a kill switch.
So how can we ensure, as a healthcare organization, or working in a healthcare organization, or working in a society that is going to become more reliant on AI, how do we make sure that the corporations that are providing us with these tools have these safeguards in place? What is our ability as an individual physician, or even a member of the American Medical Association or the American Academy of Pediatrics? How do we influence those decisions?
Number one is, we need, like I said earlier, we need you to be part of the development. We need you to make time to be part of the next change, the next widget that's coming out. Because if we're in the front lines, guiding the companies, telling them focus on this problem, work on this, make sure we're this, then we're guiding the process, as opposed to some non-clinician that's never touched a patient saying, here you go, here's AI, go with it. And it may not fix it. So that's one. Second, I think our government is starting with the executive order to make sure that we're having some safeguards in place. And when I look at safety and AI, I see it in three areas. I look at what Europe is doing through the GDPR. I look at California to see what they're doing. And then I look at the United States. And between those three, I really think there's a bell curve. On one side, if you're too conservative and too restrictive, then innovation lacks. And I feel like that may harm our society, our patients, our profession. But on the other hand, if we let this go too much, then there's dangers. So it's that fine balance. How do we do it? And that's why I keep saying, I think in my heart, it says having you as a healthcare professional in those front lines, also working with the startups, working up with Microsoft, the big dogs, to say, you know what, this is the way, and showing leadership in medicine and AI.
Thank you. So we have another couple of comments here. Don put another comment in about, you know, I think responding to your comment that we want, just like now when people Google something or they use ChatGPT to get information, medical information, we still realizing that the information may not be accurate. They still need to run that by a physician or by their provider. How does that really help facilitate this or increase the use of AI versus just adding another step in the process?
Yeah, and I get it. Unfortunately, with AI, it's not like AI picked the wrong stock and you lose money. If AI makes the wrong decision, people die or get harmed. So it's not the same. With that said, one idea that I tell my patients right now is, the next time you see your doctor, use AI to make the best questions. The average doctor and patient only get 13 minutes together. But if I know that patient, or if I'm the patient and I know I have diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, and I have XYZ that I really want to talk to my patient, I'm telling patients, again, careful with HIPAA and making sure what you're putting in your identifiers, but put into AI and have AI list the best questions, follow-up questions, so that when you're in front of the doctor, you can say, hey, doc, here's my concerns, as opposed to going to the doctor and really not knowing where that conversation's going. Being proactive about your health. And I think that'd be a quick, easy way to really get the most out of AI and human for your healthcare profession.
Dr. Guzman also talked about the see one, do one, or see one, do one, teach one. And then she put in the comment, the fourth element in there is make it better. Does AI help us accelerate our technical proficiency? Are there studies out there right now that look at either trained physicians already becoming more skillful or people who are going through their medical education experience who are able to perform at a higher level who use AI?
I haven't seen that study, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's already out there. I personally can't see it not helping. Again, knowing what you don't know is huge. Being able to really extract and learn is key. You know, I remember my mom telling me you can learn by your own mistakes or learn about reading it in a book. Well, in my opinion, I'd rather AI help me through this education process than making that mistake on a patient.
I agree. We're getting to the point where we're kind of wrapping up the show. We're down to about the last 10 or 15 minutes. So I wanted to give you a chance to really maybe expound a little bit more on thoughts and advice that you might have for our listeners about how they could get involved, and we've talked a little bit about that, but also where they could find more information. I know you've written several books, and would you mind sharing with us that information? And we'll also include that in the show notes from today's show, but also any other thoughts about good resources for those of us that are interested in becoming engaged as AI is being developed for us.
Great question. I actually wrote a course. It's online and 24/7. Anyone can take it. It's called, it's basically, and I'll give you the link, but it's AI in healthcare for my eyes. And it's, I want to say it's got over 70 hours. So I made it in such a way that anybody could just take little parts and look at the ethics or how can it work in treatment? How can it work in robotics? Or how do I even set up an account? So it goes through all of it. The second that I tell people when I give these talks is make sure that you're following people. Obviously, I'm biased. I'm going to say follow me because on my website, I put my digital twin where you can literally go on my website. It has all my books, which you asked, they're all on Amazon. So just type in Harvey Castro on Amazon and you'll see about 20 different books. And then you can reach out to me. I'm always on LinkedIn and my social media is Harvey Castro MD on everything. So just literally go to any social media and just type in Harvey Castro MD and you'll find me. But what I tell everybody is make sure that you're following the bell curve. Make sure you're looking at people on the right, people on the left, the haters that hate AI and the people that love AI. That way you see both sides. You want to get balance. Hit me up and I'll send you a slide that has just different YouTubers that you can follow that kind of give you, you know, pie in the sky guy, but then the people that don't. And I really think that's the best way to learn. I'm biased again towards LinkedIn. I love going on LinkedIn because when I see trending news or things that are coming, it's helpful. I do a lot of advisory for the country of Singapore and the Texas Medical Association. I've been doing a lot of work also with Fox News. So every time anything like that comes, I'm always pushing it out on social media. I'm really big on teaching people how to use these devices in real time. One of the examples I've been saying is, you know, this little device, again, it's not the greatest, but in the near future, we'll be able to take a picture of an EKG, analyze the EKG, and it could call the STEMI team to come in and take care of our patients. Obviously, the iPhone can do it, but this thing is $200 versus spending $1,000. So these are different ways that we can keep up with technology.
Well, yes, I'd appreciate it if you could send us the links, and we will include those on the PEMA On Demand YouTube page. And I will also be including Harvey's links for his LinkedIn. And it sounds like it's relatively easy to find you on any social media channel, but we'll push those out there as well so that people who have questions, as well as a link to some of the books that you have available on Amazon for people who are interested. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the show today, Harvey. This has been great. And I look forward to having more conversations with you. I think AI is definitely going to be something that we see grow exponentially over the next months to years. And it's interesting, I'd never heard anyone say how the IQ of these large language models is going to increase. So it's a very interesting phenomenon. I'm sure we'll have you back to give us some additional insights over the next ensuing months. It would be fascinating to see how things develop.
Well, I honestly thank you so much. Honor to be back at my MBA school. And it's been fun. So thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you again. So that wraps up our live stream for today. I want to remind you that Pema On Demand podcasts are released bi-monthly on Thursdays, and I would encourage you to subscribe to those. On September 5th, Dr. Juliana Reese, who is a Pemba alumnus, will be our guest on the Pemba On Demand podcast. Dr. Reese is the director of Healthy Tribes Program at the CDC National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention. She's an American Indian of the Navajo tribe and will be discussing From Heritage to Health, a Native American leader's journey to improve chronic health disparities. Our September 19th, 2024 show will be a podcast featuring this content from our live stream with Harvey on the show. So please tune in to that if you would like to listen to that again. And as I said, we will include information for you regarding that show as well. On September 17th, I will have Dr. Jay Greiner. He will be presenting on The Path to Excellence, a physician executive's story of challenges and successes. And in the October live stream, Dr. James Calvin will be presenting, and he will be talking about quality improvement and innovation in his experience. So thank you, everyone, for joining the show today. I really appreciate you all taking the time to join us, and I look forward to having you on our next live stream. Please don't forget to visit our website, our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@PembaOnDemand. For the schedule of future live streams. Tom Brown will also be sending those out to your email. Don't forget to subscribe to our channel and click the notification bell to be notified of our upcoming live streams. And you can find our podcasts on any of the podcast players. So please take the opportunity to subscribe to those and like those so that you don't miss any of the episodes. A special thanks to Dr. Leiter, Tom Brown, Kate Ashley for their help in putting this together. And please reach out to me if you have any suggestions for content or if you'd like to appear as a guest on the show. We'd love to have you. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Pemba On Demand, taken from our August 20th live stream with Dr. Harvey Castro. Harvey shared some fascinating insights into how artificial intelligence will be impacting not only our personal lives, but also our professional lives and the lives of our patients. Please remember that Pemba On Demand podcasts are released biweekly on Thursdays. Please join us in 2 weeks on October 3rd for Monetizing Medical Innovations, a guide for physician entrepreneurs with Dr. Hank Schiffers. And in 4 weeks on October 17th, I will have as our guest Dr. Jay Greiter. Jay is the Chief Quality Officer, University of Kentucky Healthcare. Jay was the guest on our September 17th live stream, and we will be releasing his live stream as a podcast. Also coming up in October will be our live stream on October 15th, 2024. Dr. James Calvin, a guest from our August 22nd podcast, will be discussing the creation of a Center for Quality, Safety, and Innovation in an academic department. Please don't forget to visit our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@PembaOnDemand, all one word, Pemba On Demand, for the schedule of future live streams. Please subscribe to the channel and click the notification bell to be notified of our upcoming live streams. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, Pemba On Demand, on your favorite podcast player. That wraps up our show for today. Thank you very much for joining and listening to the podcast. If you have any comments or questions regarding this episode, please feel free to add them in the comment section on our website, tiny.utk.edu/podpodcast. We love hearing from you and are happy to answer any questions you may have. I will add a link to the website below. Please also don't forget to subscribe to the podcast by clicking the subscribe button. Add Pemba On Demand to your podcast library today. I would also appreciate it if you could leave a review of the podcast on your podcast player. Share the podcast with your friends and colleagues also. Please take good care of yourselves, and as always, good luck with your future.